Brad Cole is waiting online this morning, and I want to bring you in, Brad, because it's something I want to talk to you about. This is something that Jerry Womack and Local 703, we had Jerry on the air last week talking about these food distributions, pandemic relief food distribution. Today in Craneville, starting at 9, not far from the station, on 1200 Maryland Drive. So that starts in 40 minutes, less than. And then in Murfreesboro at 9 this coming Saturday at St. Andrew's Church. We all know where that's at from Murfreesboro. Hi, Brad. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Now, the reason why I wanted you to hear that is I am curious because I'm talking to more and more city leaders, and I started making phone calls last week after speaking with Jerry Womack and their efforts to help out with people's food needs. And I was wondering if you were seeing the same thing, same fear being discussed by municipal leaders in other locations in the state.
Yes, is the short answer. And by the way, I want to recognize what the Laborers Local 773 is doing. And I know a lot of those folks, and they're doing a good job of getting stuff out to people. And that's happening across the state, too, with partnerships between communities and labor unions and social service agencies and a lot of different organizations trying to help people. So, yeah, we're hearing a lot about that and seeing it. There's a lot of need, and hopefully some of these groups are able to address it for people.
It seems to be an emphasis on our older population.
Well, they're at risk, and they're not out, and they're concerned about their livelihood because they're on fixed incomes. And, you know, as you and I age, you more gracefully than me, we tend to get nervous about things and anxious. And this is a troubling time for senior citizens and folks that are on fixed incomes of every demographic and background. So I think that that's accurate.
You know, interesting, when I was listening to Dr. Nzike yesterday talking about the holidays and ordering online, and I kind of got a little shudder at that because I know what the tax base, when it comes to sales and Christmas means a lot to different communities, right? And what it means to their tax base when people go out and Christmas shop locally. Now, I could be judging that a little too harshly because you can order online locally. You know, there's that aspect. But my first takeaway was the IDPH says use Amazon, don't go to your local store. And I'm thinking that's a terrible message when it comes to the financial security of our communities.
Well, it absolutely is. Now, there's two different angles on that. As you know, Black Friday is called that because by then, you know, businesses should be in the black and they'd be making profit through the holidays to really close out their retail year. Now, with the small businesses, brick-and-mortar stores having been closed so much this year, they're really struggling. Now, on the economic impact side, it's going to be devastating, and communities are going to suffer for a long time because that business isn't going to come back because people have shifted their buying patterns to online. For municipalities, you've seen a decline in sales tax revenue and the associated economic activity around those stores. If somebody's not going downtown or to the mall, then they're also not going out to eat. They're not, you know, stopping next door at this store or that store. They're not going to the pharmacy to get their medications. They're getting them through the mail, so they're not buying other things. However, we were successful at the Illinois Municipal League and with the help of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association 2 years ago, and then finally late last year to make some tweaks to change the way sales taxes are collected. This year, all of 2020, those retailers who are selling online or through marketplaces online are paying state use tax, and that's getting distributed to local governments. But more importantly, beginning January 1st of 2021, all of those sales will be collecting locally imposed sales tax, what the state calls retailer's occupation tax, at the point of destination where those packages are being delivered. So luckily, we've been able to see an increase in some revenues this year, and we'll see an increase in revenues from online purchases next year. But that's just one piece of it. I think we would all prefer to have that sale locally at the local business downtown or around town where you can employ local people and see that economic vitality grow. And that's what's suffering.
Jobs. Keeping the jobs here that are... We got the taxes, the government's okay, but what happens to the guy, man, woman, the family that owns the business?
And that's why I want to be very clear. I mean, the government is going to be more okay than it would have been because of the change in the sales tax collection laws, But I think as far as local governments and mayors and city council members and aldermen, they would much prefer to have those businesses thriving and active in their communities. And that's where we have serious concern.
See, many municipalities, counties, regions teetering on this cusp of being rolled back. Southern Illinois is no exception here. Are you seeing more of the communities that are part of the Illinois Municipal League issue mask mandates, say, from the city councils and in particular kind of central population locations?
We had a number of communities that issued local face covering or mask mandates early on and have done that subsequent to the state's order. So, that's happening. I think the state's order in many ways preempted a lot of communities from doing it because they could just enforce what the governor's executive orders have imposed. But it's definitely something on the minds of people, specifically in Region 5. I've just talked with the Department of Public Health, the Illinois Department of Public Health, this morning about issues in Region 5, and we're watching those numbers. We're also watching them in other areas of the state. As you know, there have been enhanced mitigation steps implemented in Region 4, which was the Metro East, also in Region 7, Region 1, which is up around Rockford. Looking at Region 3, and I mean all over. You'd pick a region number and they're under the watchful eye of what's happening. So local leaders have implemented some steps, but they're relying on the state orders mainly to enforce that.
So fair tax, what's that looking like when it comes to your municipalities? What are their concerns about this ballot question in the Constitution? Are you hearing much from your associates?
We're hearing a lot. Now, the Illinois Municipal League took a no position on the graduated income tax question, primarily because there is no benefit or really detriment to local governments. As you know, we've talked about the local government distributive fund, which is the local share of state income taxes. We're receiving about 6% of that, where we used to receive 10% of the income tax. So our funds have been cut back. When the graduated income tax was proposed, we asked the governor's office if that meant that local governments would see a fulfillment of their original share, and the answer was no. So if local governments aren't going to be made whole and receiving more funds as a result of this, if it were to pass, there's really no reason for us to be in the middle of it. So we've stayed out of it. We let people decide on their own merits. And, you know, that's a question that they can answer pro or con individually. But there's not going to be any benefit to local governments. They're not going to see the money that's been taken away from them over the last several years. So we don't have a position on it.
You know, with the census numbers and the deadline coming here, this is something you've had a lot of experience about. We talked about this recently and your experience with asking for a recount and paying for that in Carbondale at one point. And I'm wondering, and it's interesting because more of our listeners, when they contact me and I talk about the census, you start getting the feeling that maybe the Illinois exodus was maybe worse than what we thought.
Well, I know it's bad, and I think it could very well be worse than what we thought. Now, you'll recall that in the 2000 census in Carbondale, we had to take special action because they had omitted a significant census block from Carbondale's count. They put it out in rural Jackson County down in somewhere in the bottoms. They put about 5,000 people down in the bottoms that otherwise would have been right downtown Carbondale. But, you know, the census and the Supreme Court ruled on this week. The census, as of a couple of days ago, says that they've over 99% of housing units have been accounted for this 2020 census. I know they've been under a lot of stress. As you know, I serve on the National Advisory Committee for the U.S. Census Bureau. They really had a great plan laid out for this census count. However, the coronavirus just destroyed that plan because of the inability to go door to door and enumerate the count effectively. But they are going to complete their statutorily required mandate to get a count done. I think for states like Illinois and communities throughout southern Illinois, the issue is going to be how many people have left, how many people are still there, and what it's going to look like when we get the final number. Definitely going to be down, and I'm concerned about the fact that it could be down significantly.
Yeah, there's a couple things. The representation issue.
It's funding. It's representation in the Congress.
Remapping, redistricting, everything.
Redistricting, both for the General Assembly and the Congressional District.
Right.
And, you know, we used to have in Illinois 24, 25 members of Congress. We're down to 18 right now, and we'll probably be down to 16 or 17. That's a diminished representation at the federal level, and that means less support coming back to Illinois. The per capita distribution is anywhere from $1,400 to $1,800 per year per person at the federal level. And, you know, you spread that out over a decade, and you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that are going to be lost in the state of Illinois if the count is either accurate and down or inaccurate and down. Either way, it's going to be down, and that's going to be bad news for Illinois.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know that I've ever talked about this on the air, but Governor Pat Quinn had beseeched me, say, to join the Delta Regional Authority, go through their training and be part of that Delta Regional Authority. I turned him down. I kind of regret it. And it was interesting, and the reason why I thought of that was because I see that you were at the 20th anniversary of the White House Conference on the Delta, where the Delta Regional Authority was created. So you've been in the White House. When was your trip?
We just had the 20th anniversary Delta Caucus, but we had to do it online.
Oh, we had to do it virtually. So, I should have known.
But it was 20 years ago. In fact, it was May 10th of 2000 of the White House conference that actually saw the passage of the Delta Regional Authority Act, which was then signed into law in December of 2000. And so now we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the establishment of that Delta Regional Authority. And at the time, in 2000, I was a Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor George Ryan and chaired the Lower Mississippi Delta Development Commission, which actually a decade earlier had been chaired by then-Governor Bill Clinton. And so it's a great organization, and it's one of those things that serves the 8-state region of the Lower Mississippi Delta, which includes the 16 southernmost counties of Illinois. And people don't really see or think about it, but it's brought a lot of resources into that depressed area of southern Illinois. The Delta Leadership Initiative, which Governor Quinn, you indicated, mentioned to you being involved with, and a lot of other things. And it's worth noting that, yeah, we just are recognizing this 20th anniversary of the White House Conference, which was in 2000. We had a web meeting conference just this week, and we heard from former U.S. Transportation Secretary Rodney Slater and Kevin Thurm, who's the CEO of the Clinton Foundation, and other folks who were involved, and even myself, I spoke, who were involved 20 years ago and over the last 30 years trying to support that Delta region.
And it's all about poverty.
It's about disparity and economic access to programs and services, about social issues. I mean, if you look at the, and by the way, I'm going to interrupt myself. One of the things I talked about in talking about unemployment numbers and economic growth was about the development that's planned down in Cairo for the port, which is going to align with the Plaquemines port down in New Orleans. So that really literally connects the northern and southern ends of the Mississippi Delta.
Well, you're the guy who got me on that, to be honest with you. And we were having a call and interview, and you said Carroll's the only place with the confluence of two major rivers in the entire country that does not capitalize on entire country. And it's the two biggest right through the middle of this country, and have not been able to capitalize on it.
Right, and that port there is going to feed into the Tennessee River, the Missouri River, the Ohio River, obviously the Mississippi River, a lot of different tributaries that are going to be able to move traffic. And they're talking about thousands of barge units going through there. But if you look at southern Illinois, whether you look at Alexander or Pulaski County or, you know, any of the counties in that southern tip, Massac, Hardin, Pope, Gallatin, all the way up to Randolph, you would find an economic area that is very similar to the depressed areas of Mississippi or Kentucky or Tennessee, Alabama. And, you know, that's, I think, surprising to a lot of people. So we are a part of that. We, being the southern portion of Illinois, are a part of that Mississippi Delta. And while 20 years of progress have happened, there's still a lot more to be done. And it's worth noting, and I appreciate you bringing it up.
All right. Now, we were talking about the census and Illinois exodus worse than it could be, and that really lit up my American Monument text line. I want to read you one. This is from Ed from Carbondale. Illinois government has created the exodus. A lot has to do with a tax system that is overdone and many changes forced on the state that might be good for Chicago, but is bad for the state as a whole. I have lived in Southern Illinois all my life and love the area, but every year the option to move out of Illinois is more and more attractive. Not a singular statement. It is from Ed, but I hear this more and more. People even who have businesses saying, you know, I'm thinking Alabama. I mean, they've picked a place. And I'm a firm believer, no human being does anything in which they first don't envision themselves doing it. They kind of do a mental exercise of what it'd be like. They go there and their minds first and their bodies follow.
And there's a lot of people doing that. I mean, whether it's the growth states out west or in the south, whether it's Arizona or Texas or Tennessee or Florida or South Carolina, there are a lot of people that are relocating. Now, you and I have a strong belief and confidence in the region, and we know what great natural and human resources there are throughout Southern Illinois. But there are circumstances, some of which we're living through right now, where people have to say, is this what's best for me?
Right.
And if they can't survive through their business or they feel that they are overburdened by taxes, then they're going to make a decision that's best for them.
Brad,
that's
just hit on this.
A lot.
Brad just hit on this. Self-interest. It's what drives people, right? And I believe in altruism. I do. And I've seen it. But still, ultimately, there comes a point where you have to take care of yourself. We're running out of time. I've still got more stuff. You're going to be in court, or the IML going to be in court when it comes to Election Day holiday today?
Well, so the state, you know, passed the Election Day law that allowed expanded mail-in balloting and also things and other things. And one of those is that it designated this general election day as a holiday for all government offices. However, the law only modified the State Universities Act and the Schools Act, so it didn't modify the municipal code. So we've got this question, hey, does this affect local governments and municipalities? Because if it does, it's a massive unfunded mandate if we're going to have to be closed and pay holiday pay to first responders and other folks. And we couldn't get an answer out of the General Assembly or the administration, so we went to court, and we're in Sangamon County Circuit Court today to find out from a judge to read the law and say, does this affect local governments? Does all government offices mean municipalities, even though the municipal code was not modified? So we're hoping to get an answer on that today. It would be a massive unfunded mandate imposed against local governments, and it would reduce services to people. I mean, it would force communities to close their public works, maybe even their public safety offices on Election Day when there's still work to be done.
Like the clerk's office where they count the election ballots.
Well, anything related to the election itself was exempted, so yeah. They took care of that. But they didn't take care of everything else. A very ambiguous, but poorly written law.
But if you give to one and not another, you know how that works out.
Yes, you and I both do.
Can't do it. You can't do it. It causes animosity in the workplace, among other things.
So we're hoping to get an answer on that today in the court.
You know, I've gone a whole 19 minutes and 5 seconds without asking you about CURES money from the CARES Act, March 27th, its distribution in the state of Illinois, because, quite frankly, it makes my blood pressure go up.
You and me both. But we did see a little bit of progress out of the federal government a few weeks ago where they released some easing of the guidelines. And so the Treasury Department has now said that all payroll expenses for eligible employees through public safety and public health can be submitted by local governments for reimbursement. And we got the State Department of Commerce to agree to that. We've had issues with them agreeing to the federal law, as you know. But DCEO agreed to abide by the U.S. Treasury Department's new guidelines, which will allow for communities to be able to submit all their public safety costs and all their public health costs for reimbursement. You and I have been worried that they wouldn't be able to get their money back. This is going to really let them get most of those dollars back much easier. So for the small communities, if they contract for a police presence through the county or they have a direct police officer that's employed, they can go back to March 30th through December 30th coming up and submit all those expenses to get reimbursed.
Final question, which is not a question, it's a statement from one of our listeners, from Heron, who just sent in on the American Monument text line, always great to hear Brad Cole on the air. Please ask him if he'd consider running for governor.
I'm glad I've got a friend in Heron. I know I have several there, and it's good to hear from them. I've got a great job with the Illinois Municipal League, and I believe in the work that we're doing on behalf of local government. So I think I'm good for a while. But my voting residence is still in Carbondale, so you never know.